Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of amazing radio in the back of Roberta's restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And I'm joined today by a fantastic lady. I've got Laura Manick, one of the youngest master sommeliers in the world. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And congratulations, because you recently, well, in November, opened up Cork Buzz Wine Studio. So, so congratulations. It's awesome.
Thanks. It's been super, super fun.
So, before we get into that, I want to kind of, can you explain to people a little bit about your background and what it takes to be a master sommelier? Maybe some of the characteristics of being a master sommelier.
Yeah. Certainly. So grandparents made wine in Sicily, not for professional reasons, just because they loved to drink a lot of wine and figured they'd do it themselves. And you know, hospitality and food and wine were always part of my family, and big Sunday suppers of just copious amounts of wine and food. And at a very young age, I decided, I said, I want to be in the restaurant business because I want every day to feel like Sunday. And my grandmother, Rose, used to give us like tasks that seemed like the most, you know, fantastic jobs ever. And she'd be like, who wants to check coats, or who wants to make the family espresso? And I was always the first in line. And so I went to school for hotel restaurant management. I'm supposed to go to culinary school because I thought at the time, like, that's what you do. You want to be professional in the restaurant business. And I sort of registered for culinary school and accidentally took a wine class at Windows on the World in 2001, right before September 11th. And the first day of class, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. You can make a career out of wine. And, you know, obviously, I had my last class there on September 10th and kind of fell in love the first day, which was like right around August, and then decided, you know, this is kind of a moment to take a step back, not go to culinary school in October. And I took a wine job as an assistant sommelier at 21 years old. And
that's
10 years
crazy.
Later.
So you were like, you know, before that, were you taking classes, or you started taking classes at 21? Or
I just started drinking before 21. but yeah, no, my first class was officially at 21. Wow. And it was like a certification to be a sommelier. And after I finished that, I was an assistant to one of the best, you know, master sommeliers at the time, which was Greg Harrington. He now makes wine in Washington State, and he was my mentor, and he told me about the Court of Master Sommeliers, which is essentially the highest accreditation you can get in wine. And I was like, oh, what's that, master sommelier? I kind of want to be one. He's like, do you not know what it is? I'm like, yeah, but I kind of want to be one. And so, yeah, I set off on the path to do that. And there's a series of exams that you take. And I passed in 2009, and the Quartermaster Sommeliers is the role is to elevate the profession, you know, just to have, people on the floor working in restaurants that are really, really knowledgeable about wine. You know, you asked about the traits of a master sommelier. I think it's humility. I mean, it's, yeah, you know a lot, but you don't need to tell everybody how much you know. And, but in the last and final exam, it's an invite only, and there are currently 178 of us worldwide, 18 women in the world that have the title Master Sommelier. So you do a blind tasting, 6 wines, you know, you have to guess the vintage, where they come from, you know, quality. You have a theory paper, which is anything and everything about wine, spirits, beers, cocktails. That part is verbal at the master's exam. So, and then you have a practical exam, like you're working in a restaurant, except that your guests are master sommeliers and they know tons about wine.
That's so intimidating.
Can be. Can be.
I'm curious. That's a very low quotient of women. You know, do you have anything kind of insights into, it's sort of an interesting thing. You don't have to answer that, but it is a unique thing. But there's not as many women.
I think more of us need to put our hat in the ring, if you will. You know, it was always a man's profession, a sommelier. I mean, I think times are changing now. I mean, we have some fabulous women in the industry, in New York, in Brooklyn, and running restaurant wine programs. So I think times are changing for sure. I just think more people just need to, you know, try. I mean, there's no, for me, it was never any issue of like, man, women, like nobody kept me back because I was a woman. I just think that there's less people trying. But I mean, you know, they say that women have better palates or more sensitive or more observant. So, I mean, I think you'll start to see those numbers creep up in the years to come. Hopefully, you know, we're mentoring people all the time. So hopefully we'll see more women.
So what was the first wine that you tasted and you were like, oh my God, this is, I need to do this. This is my calling.
Well, I mean, the first one I tasted was probably like, you know, White Zinfandel or something cheesy, you know, I didn't know any better. But I do remember the first moment that I was like, wow, wine can be really super serious and yet approachable was I was at Blue Ribbon, I think one night after waitressing, and there was this bottle of Kaylin Semillon, which is like a winery in Livermore Valley. And it's, you know, always released like 6 or 7 years after most people would release their white wine. And it's just like a husband and wife winery. And I was like, wow, they're making wine right in Livermore Valley. And it's just super delicious. And it just really got me excited about California and about wine. And, you know, I mean, that wasn't like the first wine I tasted, but that was the first one I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then, you know, now my current obsession is champagne. And so I drink a lot of that.
Oh, it's the best. It goes with everything, I
That's
think.
That's true.
But so I want to shift gears. I want to talk about Cork Buzz Wine mm-hmm. Studio a little bit. So, you know, talk a little bit about what you're doing there, because you have some really amazing classes that you're offering. And yeah, just give a little bit of an overview.
Sure. Cork Buzz Wine Studio is my first solo project. I have a business partner who's actually my uncle. And we opened November 28th, 13th, between 5th Avenue and University, 13 East 13th. So essentially, it's a wine studio, as we call it, which is to say that we have a wine bar and full kitchen, amazing menu. Chef Hyann is a super talented woman who really believes in food and wine and the relationship that those two go together. She was at La Bernardin, at Danielle, and she's just amazing. As we say, bam, bam, in the kitchen. But so, yeah, we are open 7 days a week for food and wine. We have communal tables, so you can just meet other people and share bottles of wine if you desire, or just have great conversations around food and wine. But then we also offer about, on average, about 15 wine classes a month. And our classes are really meant to be approachable and exciting about wine. There's some for the professional or people that want to be in the profession. And so we do, you know, tour of France or, you know, blind tasting classes. But then there's just the consumer classes that just are just easy, but you can do it at home as well. So we had wines to go at takeout food the other night.
I was just going to say.
That was really fun.
Great.
It was really fun. Syrah and bacon cheeseburgers and goes really well together. Pizza and, you know, we had rosé sect from Austria and it was amazing. So we do that. And, you know, we'll do classes of seasonal classes. So we have a, you know, spring menu coming soon and Union Square Green Market right around the corner. So we'll do like what are we crushing on right now that goes great with the seasonal vegetables? So it's coming soon.
So cool. And, Yeah, I mean, I would love to know, like, what are some, beyond champagne, what are some wines that right now you're really excited about? Like, whether it's seasonal or just things that you're drinking or maybe offering.
Yeah, I mean, I find myself drinking things, like, again, in season. So I'm just looking forward to the moment where the green market stops being about apples and root vegetables and starts to be, you know, spring peas and ramps and all of those great vegetables, green. So I'm really into Austrian wine right now. I'm Grüner Veltliner. I'm digging on, you know, Vino Verde. You know, not necessarily just like the light and fizzy ones, but there's like some really cool old vine Alvarinho. I was just in Portugal and there was amazing wines there. I'm really into rosé. Not necessarily just the super fun, fresh summer wines that you think about when you start to put on like flip-flops. But there's this really great rosé from Côte de Provence, and it's called Clos Cibone. And so I poured it all winter long, and surprisingly enough, you know, rosé in the winter, people are really into. So, yeah.
It's a great wine. I love rosé all mm-hmm. the time. Mm-hmm. So, but I also love pink, the color. So yeah. Maybe that's why. So I don't know if you eat out often.
All the time.
But, you know, I would love to know some of your favorite BYOB restaurants and what you're ordering when you bring your bottle and what you bring.
Sounds good. Feel bad because it's another place that serves pizza in Brooklyn, but I love Lucali. Yeah. I'm like a huge Lucali fan, and I think it's my happy place, and I always go there and just order pizza and with, you know, shallots and garlic and basil. So I'm always bringing Italian wine there. I feel like, of course, you can pair pizza with almost anything, Beaujolais, crude Beaujolais, but I think like what grows together goes together. So I'll often bring like an inexpensive, you know, Sangiovese or Nebbiolo to Lucale for pizza. Sometimes I even bring champagne. I know I keep mentioning champagne, but I do bring champagne there. But I love it. I think it's a great BYOB. There's this place called Phoenix Garden in the city. So really great Cantonese food. And so I show up there with bottles of German Riesling and order really, really spicy food. And I love the way the sweetness of a really great German Riesling will cut through spice. So I can be found there all the time.
Yeah.
Peking Duck and Pinot Noir. I often bring like Willamette Valley Pinot Noir to have with Peking Duck as well.
I need to become your best friend, basically.
Sounds good.
And what are some of your favorite champagnes that you're drinking?
Well, I worked harvest in Champagne in 2010. And I worked for this small little grower right outside of Epernay, which is a great city. I mean, you know, it's not huge, but it's a really fun place to be. And their champagne house is called La Herte Frere. And it's, you know, eighth generation father and son winemaker. And so they make a Brut tradition, which is just like a really approachable and affordable champagne. But, you know, I really like some of the bigger houses as well. So I love Roederer Champagne. I think they do a really good job. And again, it's an affordable wine that you can just have in your fridge and you don't have to break the bank and go high end with Cristal or something like that. Although that's good too.
Yeah.
I like old Cristal though.
Well, tell me about the crush, as it's called, right? Is that the proper term?
Yeah,
for
crush.
Harvest?
Yeah, crush is the process after you pick the grapes and you crush them. So yeah, yeah. Harvest, vendage. It's really fun. I mean, if you're into wine and you are in the wine business, there's nothing like doing, you know, being involved and hands-on. So harvest in 2010 in Champagne, the vines are really low to the ground. And I was getting ready for the New York City Marathon, which was in November, and I worked harvest in September. So I was running all the time through the vineyards after work. It's back-breaking labor. You're like basically bent in half the whole time. And there was a team, about 40 of us. And these pickers, some of them have been working with the family, La Herte family, for 10, 15 years. So you meet people from all over Europe. And there's always like other, you know, countries that send people to work harvest. And so I met so many people. But you know that term, like I heard it through the grapevine?
Yes.
So, you know, you're in a team of two and one person is on each side of the vine and you're just cutting clusters of grapes and putting them in your basket and, you know, you wake up in the morning and you're all layered up, and you know, and by midday you like strip off your layers and you're just like chatting it up. We play music in the vineyards, but I stayed with the family, so three meals a day. They take care of everything. I slept there, and it was just like this, such a rich experience. You know, nothing like it. I mean, I was passionate about champagne beforehand, and then I was like, okay, I get it. You know, I know exactly what it takes to do this. And so it was hard work, but I wouldn't ever change a thing. It was so much fun.
It sounds awesome. It sounds like a great opportunity. We have to unfortunately take a quick break.
Nice.
But when we get back, we have more from Laura Manick. You are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. Keep it locked.
Has been sponsored by the Hearst Ranch. At Hearst Ranch, ranch manager Cliff Garrison describes their philosophy. Raising cattle on grass is both an ancient practice and one that is standard in much of the modern world. Sometimes the old ways are the right ways. We believe that our methodology is the right one for us. For more information on their premium grass-fed beef, visit HearstRanch.com.
You're just tuning in. You're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm joined today by Laura Manick, the genius behind Cork Buzz Wine Studio. We're talking all about wine today, y'all. And, okay, I got a bunch of just like quick fire wine questions for you because, you know, let's face it, there's a lot of young folks out there that don't feel that comfortable. Maybe they go to like Trader Joe's and buy a wine and it's great and, you know, whatever. But let's play a little game. What do you do when, if you're going out on a date with somebody, maybe this is more for your date, like your date is ordering the wine and they don't know what they're doing. What's the best way to deal with a sommelier, or what's the best way to fake it in terms of being like, yeah, that's good?
That's a great question. I would say, you know, just like anything, if there's somebody that knows a little bit more about something than you do, the best way to engage them is to just be like, what are you excited by right now? So like if I'm on a date, instead of being like, I don't know anything about wine and just picking something random, I might just, you know, fake it a little bit by being like, I'm really into wine. I'm into discovering new things. I know that this is your house. You work here, you know, 5 days a week. What are you into right now? I mean, that's the best question, because then you get this excitement and the sommelier's eyes all light up and they're probably going to give you a better wine. Let's just say maybe less expensive or a better value, just because you're actually asking them what they think. And you don't look stupid because, you know, you're just talking about wine, having a conversation, super simple. I know if you asked me in that same question in my place, I'd probably give you exactly what I would serve my family.
Yeah. How do you think, kind of piggybacking on that, like, how do you think the culture of wine is changing within, like, ages, per se, like, of people? Do you think that there's a generational shift happening of, I mean, you're a testament to that, I believe, but how do you think young people are integrating into this, like, very long-winded culture nowadays?
I think there's a lot less snobbery around wine. I think people are less intimidated. I mean, obviously, as Americans, we're drinking more than we ever have, you know, so we're exploring wine. And I think the face of the sommelier has changed as well. I mean, no longer do we have those, you know, silver cups around our neck, and it's a, you know, a suit type of setup where you feel a little bit intimidated. I think right now the face of the sommelier is young and approachable and fresh, and so the interaction with the guests in the restaurants are a little bit, you know, less intimidating as well. And it's just really, really nice to see. You know, there's so many times when you walk in a restaurant and there's a sommelier there, and these days there's not like a you and me, like, you know, us versus the sommelier anymore. And I think it's just about, you know, a conversation. It's really fun.
What are some really wonderful, versatile wines that you can recommend that are kind of great for pairing across different types of dishes and, you know, proteins, vegetables, whatever?
Mm-hmm. I think for red, you know, it's safe to say that Pinot Noir is a very versatile wine. You know, I mean, you can have a Pinot Noir with fish or with, you know, steak or chicken. So, you know, Willamette Valley Pinot Noir is kind of like an in-between, not necessarily the really earthy or tart, you know, red fruit that you might get in Burgundy, but maybe not that candied fruit that you might get sometimes, or a little bit more richer fruit from California. So it's a nice way to go. And usually you can get some good value there. I think Riesling, both dry and sweet, are very versatile for food and wine pairing. I mean, the key is, you know, a lot of times chefs make dishes that are high in acid, and you want wines that are equally refreshing and tart and crisp to go with those dishes. And you know, you want to avoid tannin and fish oil, and, you know, maybe intensity of the wine should match the intensity of the dish. So I think Riesling and Pinot Noir are some go-to wines for a wide variety of food and cuisine.
What is the deal with boxed wine? Now, the first time I had boxed wine was Franzia in college.
Me too.
I thought I was really classy, and it didn't end well. And I'm noticing more and more in wine stores that there's a ton of boxed wine, and there's some really great boxed wine. I've actually had some. What's the deal with that?
I think it's starting to be more popular because there's better quality boxed wines coming out. I mean, I think you can look at a producer in France now and say, hey, we want to, you know, bottle the same Sancerre you make and put it in a box in a Tetra Pak instead. You know, we're a little bit more responsible with recycling and not wasting as much. So it's certainly better to buy a box wine. Maybe it's four bottles instead of having those four bottles and having to waste the glass. And I think it's just better quality these days. So it's definitely something that you can count on. And I wouldn't buy I'm not going to diss on anyone's wine, but I think the higher quality wines are starting to show up in boxes. I love them in the beach, you know, in my summer home in Fire Island. I like to bring, you know, boxed wine so I don't have to keep schlepping the bottles to the recyclables.
It's like a mini keg. That's
exactly
the maybe trashiest thing I could say.
And it stays fresh.
It's like definitely, yeah, it's awesome. I mean, how does it work though? Because if you keep it in your fridge for a week or so, is it okay?
Yeah, because it doesn't allow oxygen to get inside of the bottle of wine. I mean, that's the thing you want to avoid when you take out a cork from a bottle and you open it, you'll have a little bit of an extra oxygen in that bottle of wine. So it gets oxidative. I mean, it's like cutting an apple and leaving it on your counter. It goes to brown. So sometimes you get those older flavors the longer you keep a bottle of wine open. So with the Tetra Pak, which is inside of a box, it'll keep it sealed so you don't have that oxygen exchange, so it'll last longer.
Magic, that's what you're saying. So let's talk a little bit about some of your favorite U.S. wineries, maybe smaller, maybe you know, small family, unique, whatever. It can be big, small. Give me some names.
Names. You want a name?
Favorite band names.
All right. Well, starting off, we'll start sparkling, then go light white, full white, that kind of thing. So sparkling wine, I really like Iron Horse. They're in Sonoma, and they make really great sparkling wine. I think that if you blind tasted that against champagne, you would say qualitatively, you know, it tastes similar. So they have like Wedding Cuvée. I also like Schramsberg. I think they do a really great job with domestic sparkling wine. There's this, you know, let's see, who do I like? Sauvignon Blanc, maybe Honig from Napa Valley. Always unoaked, refreshing, family-owned winery, super cool people that run it. Light red. I'm into this producer called La Clarine. Or I'm sorry. There's a wine called La Clarine, which is in Sierra Foothills, and they make like a Nebbiolo blend. It's really, really good. Inexpensive. Let's see. I'm on the spot here.
You're not mentioning, I think, the obvious one, Ben Flagnick from The Bachelor. No, I'm just kidding. Have you been watching that, by the way?
I haven't.
He
I did meet him, though. He came into Quirk Buzz.
He makes wine, apparently.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never tried the wine. But he, I think, well, I guess he doesn't make the girls, you know, harvest. But I think he takes them to the vineyard at some point.
That's fun.
Anyway, sorry. Go on.
I like Benzinger, which is associated with that winery. They're all biodynamic, organic winemaking. In Sonoma. They're pretty cool.
Sweet. Awesome. No, this is asking a filmmaker their favorite film. It's virtually impossible. But that's an amazing array of spots that you just hit. So, thank you.
I forgot to mention my mentor's wine. Gramercy Cellars in Washington State. He makes an amazing Syrah. Super, super awesome.
Can you get that in New York?
Or? Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay. I mean, they're distributed in New York and nationwide, but he's amazing. I mean, he just started making wine 3 years ago, and some of the best Syrah I've had from Washington is from him.
Awesome. Well, so circling back to Quirk Buzz, what are some of the classes that we can kind of look forward to this spring? Like any fun theme classes or?
Yes. In April, we're going to do a series of cheese and wine classes. And I'm going to co-teach with somebody that I think is one of the, you know, experts in cheese named Valdemar. And we're going to do an all-American wine class with American cheeses. And then we're going to do the following week an old world versus new world wine and cheese pairing class, which is really fun.
Wow.
We also do these things that we call Sunday supper. And it's kind of modeled after that dinner I said earlier, which was my grandmother's, you know, Sunday dinners. We do a four-course menu, and Chef Haiyan pairs every course, or makes every course special. There's nothing that's on our menu. So every, you know, month we get to decide what our Sunday supper is going to be, and then I pair them with wine. And it's really fun. There's only 18 seats at the table, and you get to just meet people that love wine and food. It's a really good social experience as well.
Yeah, I imagine by the end of it, everybody's best friends with one another, right?
Yeah, there are these six guys that I love, and they came the first week and the first month we had our Sunday supper, and then they just continue to book up. And so out of the 18 seats, like six are basically sold. The February supper, they book up for March, and then the March, they book up for April. So it's pretty fun.
Has anyone ever started dating because of it? Or have you seen any couples formed because of Quirk Buzz?
I'm sure there's couples formed at one of the communal tables. People meet each other. But Sunday supper, I don't know yet, but a lot of friendships have formed. I know that.
It sounds super rad. And we have to sadly wrap things up. And now I just want a glass of wine. I want some champagne, to be honest with you.
Me too. Let's do it.
This beer is pretty good too. But Laura, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me, Helen.
And go check out Quirk Buzz Wine Studio off of Union Square for more classes. And thanks to Jack Inslee and the rest of the crew at Roberta's and Heritage Radio Network. I'll see y'all next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network.
You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Changes my mood, eating those